Welcome to the Contact Center Expert Show. This show is hosted by Nancy Monroe, CEO of Verbal Transactions, a voice enablement technology company. Join our discussion on how you can make your contact center a well-oiled machine.
Ooh, here they are. They're back again.
Wow.
So pumped. They are pumped for this guest I have on today. All right, calm down. All right. So let me introduce Mark Woolley, who has 30 years of experience in customer relationship management, multi-channel customer experience management, and contact center operations and technology implementation. His industry experience spans healthcare, financial services, telecommunications, manufacturing, and consumer products. He's held senior leadership roles with Walgreens, Convergys, Capgemini, and eLoyalty, helping clients transform their service and sales capabilities through technology implementation, process improvement, and organizational change. He also has 15 years' experience managing large-scale contact centers of Fortune 500 organizations. And so Mark also holds a bachelor's degree in economics from Eastern Illinois University. So welcome to the show, Mark.
Well, thank you, Nancy. It's great to be here.
Yeah, so our topic for today, I think, is extremely timely. We're going to talk about blurring the lines of remote and at-home workers. And, you know, I've been sitting in on a lot of webinars and a lot of discussions and association presentations, and this is certainly something that contact centers are really going to be struggling with. Even as a vaccine is getting rolled out, I think organizations have seen that some people – you know, prefer to work from home, or it's given them different business models that they can work with. So I don't know if you've got any clients that you're currently working with that are struggling with this topic.
Yeah, actually, probably every client is struggling. And
right.
So, but let me start off by saying, you know, COVID has been disruptive to say the least, and I think we'll talk a little bit about where my clients have been, where I've been, where we are now, and then a little bit about where I think the disruption is driving us. So I think there are certainly some positives once we get out of the darkness. You know, a couple of lead-in comments. You'll hear me refer to agents, and it's generic. That's a customer service representative or customer care advisor. So I use agents generically.
Sure.
And so many of the issues, companies, both my clients, but companies in general are facing with this hybrid work environment. And so our listeners know, remote, you know, when I say hybrid work environment, it's remote versus the brick and mortar. They're very different depending on the maturity of the organization. So I've been working with a variety of clients during the past year with different levels of maturity and the various challenges they've faced.
Mm-hmm.
It's been fascinating. One of the nice things about being a consultant is I get to be part of the team. I get to be part of the solve, but I'm also looking from the outside in. So it's fascinating. And the thing that's unique here is the issues they're facing. It's not necessarily driven by size or scale. A lot of times, oh, we want to be big and that's complex. This is not necessarily size or scale, but again, more maturity. And when I say maturity, I mean in terms of their processes and technology that are in place. So if I can, Nancy, let me give you a few examples of the maturity.
That'd be great.
And so about 10 years ago, so I'll go back in time a bit. About 10 years ago, I helped a major pharmacy retailer establish a large-scale work-at-home model. And that was we had over 500 folks that went from brick and mortar into a remote setting, work-from-home setting. And the driver there was rapid growth and a lack of space. So basically, they needed more space, didn't have it. What's the solution? Well, we could move to work at home and test it out. And so first of all, I'll say it was extremely, extremely successful in that we saw significant and most importantly, sustained benefits of increased productivity. And one of the cool things about this particular activity is that we still had some folks in brick and mortar, so we could compare and contrast the different work environments. And so we saw increased productivity, reduced attrition, and reduced absenteeism. So those were the positives, and those are, you know, that's what makes
nice.
An operator happy.
And just
a lesson learned, because it wasn't, I make it sound a little bit easy, but one of the big lessons learned is when we started it, we had mixed teams, meaning if I'm a supervisor or a frontline manager, some of my team worked from home and some were brick and mortar. And what we found pretty quickly is that put a lot of pressure on those, on that mixed, that hybrid put a lot of pressure on that frontline manager. And so when we moved to dedicated teams, that helped resolve that. And the other thing that was interesting is that we also saw the work from home supervisors were better able to handle larger teams. So their command and control could be a little bit larger. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just some real fascinating things. And again, this is over a decade ago. Another example, there are mature BPOs. I work a lot with business process outsourcers, and there are a number of BPOs out there, and I'll give an example. There's one called Arise, and their business model and supporting processes and technologies, it's based on 100% work from home. That's the way they've always operated. So their technology stack, their processes, how they recruit, everything is work from home. And so they've done that as a successful business for years and years. And then I'll kind of fast forward to now or to more recently. Last March, I was working with a mid-sized BPO that had no work at home. March 12th, when everything got locked down. And by the way, they were international. So they had a large presence in the Philippines, and the Philippines closed down operations ahead of the United States. So this started early, but so they had no work at home. We ended up sending the desktops, shipping or delivering them to folks' homes at the same time. So that was the immediate. But it took weeks to establish that technical infrastructure, the security environment, and then establishing, probably more importantly, so that a lot of times the technology is the easy part, right? It's like, oh well, you load software or it's hosted. So, but establishing and I say that lightly. But the more difficult was establishing and refining their policies, processes, and operating procedures. That took months. And so how do we operate in this new model? They hadn't done it ever. So this company was forced to make these changes or go out of business. So it was, gosh, hurry up. So you had to hurry up. We've got to do something. That causes lots of stress, usually some errors, all the complexity there. That's a business case. And then finally, I'm currently working with a client in the life insurance industry. And when we did the lockdown in the United States, all their employees went remote, but it was easy because it was part of their business continuity and disaster recovery plan. So everyone took their stuff home. They had their technology environment was already established, and so they were able to do that on a dime in essence very quickly. Now the problem they had is weeks before the COVID lockdown, they just signed long term leases on space. My point on all these different examples is the disruption is quite varied in company specific, and it goes back to my comment about maturity. So I just think I think disruption is the right word.
I think you're right. back in, let's see, this August before COVID hit, I was speaking at a PACE event in New York, and somebody gave the statistic that 70% of contact centers were still running on-premise infrastructures. And, you know, so I'm curious, you know, so I think they eventually we're all going to maybe move towards the cloud, but I think COVID accelerated that move. So I don't know if you agree with that statistic, or because that seemed really high to me at the time. So I don't know if you agree with that statistic or not.
Yeah, you know, I can't disagree with it. I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that specific. But as I look at my portfolio of clients, it's about right. I would say it would be more of a mix. So we've certainly had, mm-hmm. and just to give you the example from the major pharmacy retailer, we have 500 people working from home, about 2,000 working in a number of different centers across the organization.
Wow.
So that 70-30 mix, might be the right mix.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. So with the when you talk about the maturity model, then would you say those that were a more mature organization had less disruption or more disruption because of their kind of sunk costs and infrastructure that they've had longer?
Yeah. Even that depends, right? So what type mm-hmm. of – so maybe this is a company that is deep in Six Sigma or in process
mm-hmm.
expertise. Mm-hmm. So they have all their they're well documented. They're buttoned down. They're running a great organization. But there was a philosophy by senior leadership that said, our folks come into the office. If you had that philosophy – you were still disrupted because now you have a change. And I'll tell you, some of the BPOs, especially the and healthcare companies, it's pretty rare before COVID for a healthcare company to allow BPO to have folks work from home because of some of the regulations and privacy.
Yeah.
And that all went out the window pretty quickly. In order to service customers and patients, so even companies that were pretty mature, they were, I'll just say, very mature in their technology and their processes. If it wasn't the right technology, that's going to take time. And I think I'm speaking a little bit out of place here, but I expect that those technology vendors, particularly those that offer those, you know, those hosted solutions or some type of hybrid solution, their phones were ringing pretty heavily when this went down. It's like, right, what can we do? What can we do quickly? So I think that's definitely the case.
And we thought with our solution, you know, because it's a simulation platform, you don't have to have somebody standing there watching you tell you what to do. It has all these great bots that interact with the person taking the simulation to give you feedback. We thought, you know, this is it. This is a good thing for us. You know, people can be completely self-directed and da, 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 da. We even got it to where it was hosted in a cloud environment so that, you know, you didn't have to worry about, you know, messing with your computer if it didn't have speech rec on it or whatever. And it was the opposite because, you know, people were still putting out all these fires and just keeping, you know, the doors open, basically, that, you know, they couldn't take the time to look and evaluate another solution that would probably be better for them because they were just kind of, you know, putting duct tape on everything just to keep the doors open.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the training aspect is certainly – It remains, you know, a big challenge with duct tape on it. Some of the things I saw, you know, remote learning remains difficult for some companies because of the lack of instructor led training platforms. So didn't have the platform, so they might be using Teams or Zoom. But that's not really a training platform. That's a collaboration platform. but it can, you can make it work, right? So now I'm yes. dealing with a tool or piece of technology that I'm not necessarily using it for what it was designed. And then, yeah. and then of course, a lot of companies have learning management system platforms,
mm-hmm.
but those are great
mm-hmm.
for individual training, right? I take my, I go through a, you know, automated PowerPoint and take my test at the end. But those,
yeah.
those are not typically designed for classroom setting or distance learning, you know, or distance learning. But there's tons of technology out there. You know, the distance learning technology, that's mature. You look at the education
mm-hmm.
industry and schools
mm-hmm.
like University of Phoenix, and they've been operating
yeah.
for decades.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
the tools are out there, but if I need the tool, if I don't know I need the tool and tomorrow I need it, well, I'm, you know,
yeah.
I've got to run around and find it and try to establish that. So that's certainly disruptive. And so what, hey, I'll repeat what I said earlier. I think the technology is the easy piece to establish.
Yeah.
The trainers need to establish methods
yes.
and processes
yes.
to optimize that training experience and effectiveness for adult remote learners. So
yeah.
We've shaken everybody's, or COVID has shaken everybody's world up, and it's like, do I have the right tool? Do I know how to use the tool? Oh, if this
mm-hmm.
if this tool is suboptimal, how can I use the tool in an optimized fashion? That's a hot one.
Well, and the CCW had an event last week for at home. You know, the whole topic was at home, and they did a poll of this one session where, you know, how are you delivering training today? And then how effective is it? How effective do you feel it is? And so majority of them were still doing instructor-led, even though they're using Teams or Zoom, and it was about 15% effective. I'm like, well, why are you still using it then?
Wow.
It's like,
wow.
You know, because it's the worst way from a retention standpoint to teach anybody any new skill. And you're right, there's learning management systems out there today that track, that check the box that somebody took a course or attended a class, but it doesn't tell you if they learned anything. And so in our little soapbox, we say, no, we can actually tell you if they learned anything. You know, imagine that. I can tell you if they got the greeting right. I can tell you it took them 3 times to authenticate the customer correctly. I can tell you how many minutes it took them to ask an open-ended question when the customer stated a problem. You know, so those are the things that are important to a call center. And in COVID, you know, if I can do that in a way that you don't have to sit there and watch a recording of somebody doing this, you just pull up this nice little report that lets you drill down to, okay, this group, that new hires that were brought on board remotely with this manager and this instructor on this day, which simulations they took and how many people, you know, got XYZ wrong. So, you know, it's not just our technology. There's other tools out there that we just saw one from eTech Global. I don't know if you've ever worked with them. But because when people see what our simulator can measure, they're like, oh, well, can you do the same thing on live calls or recorded calls where you can parse it out just like a QA checklist?
Right.
And so eTech, we just became a partner with them because they have a software that can lay on top of a majority of the call center CRMs and look at and take the recorded calls, then parse it out by the QA checklist and score it. And I'm just like, okay, that's what people were asking us to do with our simulator, but you already have it. And then once you see that somebody has a weak spot, then we could, you know, maybe prescribe a simulation for them to then take. But they've already got this tool out there. It doesn't take it from the manager's scorecard. It's a scorecard on each individual person. And then what they built into it, because the guy that kind of crafted it has worked in BPOs forever, he says, yeah, then I wanted the employee to ask their manager for coaching and then rate how well they got coached. It's versus the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah. And go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that's the name of the game. I mm-hmm. completely believe the 15% effectiveness, in that almost every call center has front-end, front end attrition is the highest. So if you walk in and say, "Hey, where do you lose people?" Like first 90 days, it's almost universal. And when you dig into that, and I've done tons of employee roundtables and focus groups, and when you hear things like, "Oh well, we covered this in 10 minutes. You hear little snippets. No wonder they feel the training was ineffective, and no wonder they feel unprepared for their role.
And now they're
talking to folks and they quit. It's like, gosh, I feel really uncomfortable. I don't feel like I've been trained right. And then the other cool thing that you were just talking about with this partnership, having the ability to trace back to the trainer, and with the more specifics, the better. But there are weak links in every company and every organization. But if you have a trainer, and in many cases, you might have multiple trainers in larger operations. You certainly have multiple trainers, and to know who is doing a good job versus a great job.
Right.
What makes them great, and then take that if you can take that piece of greatness, that process, or maybe that example that is just driving the training effectiveness, and then share that with the other trainers. It does change the game in terms of agents. Number one, being ready from a quality perspective, and then secondly, they stay longer. They feel the company cares.
Right.
The company is engaged with them to ensure they can do the job. So everything you said is really, really cool stuff, because it's a problem across maybe not every contact center, but most.
Yes. Yeah. And the coaching, because of COVID, you know, it's almost like you have to go out of your way to, you know, because you can't just walk by their cubicle anymore and say, "Hey, how's it going?"
Right.
You know, you don't have that very, you know, spontaneous capability anymore. So, you know, organizations have to give the right tools to the coaches and the managers in order for them to interact in different ways than they were doing, you know, pre-COVID. And so I don't know if you have seen any good examples of a call center that's done that well.
You know, I'll say a couple of things, I mean this in a super positive way. So the use of collaboration tools like Teams and Zoom, I'm seeing a lot of operations staying connected, both one on one with their remote agents, and many to one. So they may have a group that I have a question, and I can type it in there, and it goes to this group of experts, and then I'm talking. Maybe I'm chatting or talking with my supervisor more than I did before, because it's just easier. No one has to get up. No one has to walk anywhere. We don't have to find a room. We don't have to find a private space. It already exists. So I think that's one of the real positive, and it's helping to support team culture, even though it's remote. But it's quick communication, and you know, the other thing, and we talked a little bit about this, this type of connection, and you know, this one-on-one connection with the supervisor, and then the many-to-one, it's blurring the lines of responsibility between workforce management team, where I may have an intraday performance analyst, their job today is watching agent adherence to schedule and productivity. While the operations supervisor and team leaders now with the collaboration software, they're doing the same thing. So this may introduce, this may be an opportunity to reduce a role, reduce costs, or at the very least simplify the operating model. Who's responsible for this? I am, and I do it all day long, not two people doing similar or the same thing. So I think that's one of the benefits.
That's a good point. And do you see that if a manager's I guess, you know, is the manager pulling the person away remotely? Does the agent have to say, well, okay, that's going to go against my time card, or that's going to go against when I'm not available to take calls? Do you see that as a negative in that situation?
You know, it's turning out. So my short answer would be no. And the reason being, because you're connected regularly, and most folks today are familiar with are accustomed to the asynchronous nature of chat, right? You may not respond right back to me. So I think that's one piece that's positive. The other is I may be able, because I'm connected to you, I may be able to have a synchronous chat with you, because I know it's not busy. So I've checked with workforce, or I've looked at our call queue, or I know that this is a slow time of day always, or we're overstaffed. So I think that constant connection, or the near constant connection, is helping to facilitate that communication and coaching and driving engagement, right? If the agent is home and they're feeling, you know, it's like, gosh, I don't feel connected. And if we can help them feel more connected, that's a big part of retention and reduced attrition.
Yeah. I was listening to somebody from Twitter that was talking about how they making sure that their agents take breaks, you know, because we're working from home, it's easier just to kind of, you know, sit in your chair all day and sit in front of the computer. So they're forcing them to, like, get away, you know, don't be available, and really reaching out to them. They're providing them with all kinds of mental health counseling. They're adding extra activities and comping them to, you know, if they want to do something, a meditation app or whatever. I think it was Zoom itself mentioned that one of the perks they gave everybody last year was if you buy a book, they'll pay for it. You know, just send them the receipt, any book that you buy, you know. So I think, you know, hopefully organizations are realizing that they have to, like you say, engage with the employee in a different manner, because they're all, you know, kind of on their own working independently. And so I don't know if you've seen any of your clients doing something different like that.
So a number of clients are using some of those I would call them industrial engineering techniques and technology, and that it's like, oh, it's time to stand up. And it's not unlike your, you know, if you have an Apple Watch or something, it's like, time to stand up. You've been sitting down for an hour, or time to take a quick break. So that is becoming more and more common. It's kind of interesting to see the individual folks' reaction. It's like, well, I don't want to take a break right now. It's like, well, you probably should. That's, you know, we want you to step away, right? Look away for 20 seconds and look 20 feet away, that type of thing. So I think that's where I think that ties into that employee engagement, and helps the employees know. I mean, they may fight the statement, but, or fight the process a little bit at first, but it's an easy message as a leader to say, man, we care about you. We care about your mental health. We care about your physical health. We care. That's why we do this. Oh, well, that's nice. Yes. You're doing the right, you're trying to do the right thing. And I haven't had any complaints yet. And, you know, anytime I've tried to do the right thing.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. It's on a previous podcast, I was talking to one of my guests, and we talked about maybe taking recorded calls that you're using as training examples, and allowing them to put them on, like, your mobile device or your iPod or whatever, so that you can listen to it away from your desk and take a walk. You know, so you can still be working on work things, but doing it in a different environment, outside or on a treadmill or whatever, just to kind of get the blood flowing and, you know, like you say, your mental health going there. So for my last question, you know, once the world is kind of quasi back to normal, what would be one of the first things that you're going to do?
Personally or professionally?
Either way.
interesting things that's happening is you know, so companies are deciding to move, or trying to decide to move some, you know, some or all agents to work at home. And as they do that, they, you know, I mentioned earlier about unneeded real estate. So disposing of unneeded real estate or calculating the new real estate requirement, that needs to be addressed. So I expect they'll be helping clients with that. You know, it used to be work at home was one of the, you know, was a business disaster recovery solution. But usually not fully scalable. So we need to harden that process. And so I think the direction, you know, the direction I believe companies should be moving and are moving is to a single operating model, regardless of the center, if they're center-based or home-based, to simplify the environment, right? We do it the same no matter where you are. And so we're starting to hear terms like home sourcing, where the entire employee life cycle is based on the employee being remote. So recruiting, onboarding, training, coaching, et cetera, are all remote. This same model can be used for center-based agents, and that's going to simplify the operating model and drive consistency across the organization. So I think that's where we need to go. How quickly we do that, I'm not sure, but those are some of the conversations I'm having now, and I think that's that's going to be a big solve.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that, and I think our studio audience would also agree with that.
Oh, I love this! I love this audience.
Yeah, they're great. They're the best. Well, thank you.
You guys are awesome,
Mark. Thank you for joining us. It was great having you on, and you know, we'll have you back on in the future, and hopefully we'll have new topics to talk about that are more positive in the environment.
Yeah. Well, Nancy, thanks for having me. I look forward to talking with you soon.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Mark.
Thank you. Take care.
Yep. Bye.